Session number 12778.
General Martin, Ring 20.
But they were totally bemused by this new tactic. Didn't know what to do, and eventually started to come back to work in an orderly way without any fresh posters or chanting of Mao's works. And that was very nearly the end of the trouble on the border, except that about a month later, Inspector Knight of the Hong Kong police, who thought that he knew the Mankum Tau coolies really well, and who kept saying they were really a very friendly bunch, decided off his own bat and without telling anybody that he was go down and have a smoke a cigarette with them down in the compound while they were transferring vegetables one day to the lorries. And so telling the Gurkha soldiers on the hilltop that it's perfectly all right, they needn't worry, he'll be back shortly, just going down to chat him up. Off he went and was instantly seized and carried across the bridge into Chinese territory. Whereupon we then did erect a Hadrian's Wall, where there were fierce battles for some days, in the end, Inspector Knight appeared one day, having escaped from the other side and come back across the border. I think his friends all believed he had genuinely escaped. His critics, of whom there were quite a number, thought that the Chinese had allowed him to escape because he was an embarrassment and the Mankum Tau bridge was still closed and they were losing a lot of trade. So that was really the end of a very peculiar little battle, little war up on the border. All sorts of people came to see us, of course, during this time. The head of the Far East desk at the Foreign Office commented that it was a mixture of charades and deadly earnest. Tom Dryberg, MP, writing the Times, said that the forces on the border have been superbly disciplined and notably well officered. And my own feeling was that although we hadn't handled it as expertly as we might have done, there was no ground left for lasting ill feeling. And I think that was probably the most important thing of all.
Can I ask you one or two questions about it?
Yes.
About the early incident at Shattercock. Do you think there would have been anything that could have been done to have prevented those policemen being killed at that post?
No, I don't think there was anything that could have been done at that stage because it wasn't simply wasn't envisaged that there would be a lethal attack with weapons. I think most of them had been killed by the time in very short time after the attack took place. What was very difficult, of course, was, one of the most embarrassing times of my life, was sitting in this police station at Fanling with the desperate cries for help coming, and why doesn't the army come? And being forbidden and forbidden and forbidden, despite constant referrals back to Hong Kong. Because in the bigger picture, they were so frightened of giving excuse to the Chinese army to come into Hong Kong, which might have happened, could have happened, from if we'd been involved in a shooting match up there.
In connection with this, it's often said about people who served in India before 1947, when the British were ruling India, that the riot tactics there were very good for keeping order, they say, because what they used to do was to, as it were, read the riot act, and then if there wasn't a response, for one marksman to pick out a ringleader and shoot him dead, what would have been the effect of using those tactics?
Well, we were in a different position because we were operating on an international border against the citizens of another country. So all your riot acts and so on were happening down in Hong Kong against our own people. But operating against citizens of another country on an international border required somewhat different techniques.
Because you had a foreign army there, for one thing.
Yep. What was very interesting, I think, were the reactions of the Gurkha soldiers. They are absolutely splendid if you can give them clear orders. For example, orders to hold the Menkhamto Bridge. They showed tremendous courage and you knew they would hold it. But faced with the rather difficult situation of trying to use minimum force, but being prepared to escalate if necessary, so that you could give no clear orders, you could only say, we hope you won't have to open fire. If you do, it can only be if the fire against you is effective, and so on. To make them, put them in a situation where they had to decide for themselves on the spot what the correct action was rather too difficult for them. And I had one time the Welsh Regiment under command as a reinforcement battalion up there, and it was infinitely easier to get them to take an appropriately sensible action when something happened, and knowing the general guidelines, rather than the Gurkha soldier who had to know the exact conditions and what he should do and what he shouldn't do.
Was it possible to tell what the attitude of the Gurkha soldiers was towards this apparently very lenient British policy on the border?
No, I think they accepted it. The great thing about the Gurkha soldiers at that time is that what the British officer said was right. If the British officer said, fire, you fired, and that was right. If he said, don't fire, you didn't fire, and that was right. He had, certainly at that time, complete faith in the British officer. He was being, of course, bombarded with propaganda the whole time across the border on these loudspeakers and told to abandon his British officers and stab them in the back and all that sort of thing, which just amused them.
In what language?
In, I think in Gurkhali, some of it. But it was mostly Cantonese, which of course they didn't understand anyhow. But they were told, and we were told them what it was. But yes, in Gurkhali too.
What do you think their attitude was towards the Chinese who were causing the riots?
I think that they would have probably been very happy to have slaughtered the whole lot. But I think they thought they were, sort of just bad men and you do what the British officer says about it.
What was the occasion you mentioned when one drew blood?
Yeah. He chopped somebody's finger off, I think. One of the coolies who was trying to take his rifle off him, I think. He just chopped his finger off.
What about the attitude of the Chinese generally in the colony? Because now we have a situation where Hong Kong Chinese are very worried about being taken over by China. What was the attitude of the great mass of Hong Kong Chinese themselves?
Up in the New Territories, they were solidly pro-government, pro-British government, and they stuck their neck out. They were also individually being targeted by the Cantonese radio and told exactly what was going to happen to them when the Chinese army got in, etc. But they were almost without exception entirely loyal. Some people would say they were entirely loyal, others would say they were acting in their own best interest by supporting the government. Downtown, there was a great mixture, and a lot of people were very frightened that the Chinese really were coming in. And so government, they were being encouraged to make, and the big chaps were being encouraged to make public statements in support of government. And these went forthcoming straight away, most of them. I think like any Chinese, they are very pragmatic and they will do what seems sensible at the time and support whoever it seems sensible to support at the time. But the money, the big money people, of course, are all frightened of their empires collapsing. And a lot of them got out of the colony for a bit until things settled down. Just as nowadays, most of them have got foreign nationality anyhow, or foreign passports.